Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Rushing?
Here.
Commissioner McMahon?
Present.
Commissioner Galway Jones?
Here.
Commissioner Placer?
Here.
Commissioner Kimball?
Here.
I'm here. Commissioner Lowe?
Here.
Commissioner Stanton?
Present.
Commissioner Burns?
Here.
We have nine. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Mr. Zenner, are there any adjustments or additions to the agenda?
No, there are not, ma'am.
Thank you.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Mr. McMahon, seconded by Mr. Stanton. I'll take a thumbs up approval of the agenda. Looks unanimous. Thank you, everybody. Everyone should have received a copy of the December 9th meeting minutes. Were there any corrections or changes to those minutes?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. I'll take a thumbs up approval on those. Looks unanimous. Thank you. All right, that brings us to our first item on the agenda, which is a tabling request. Case 43-2022, a request by the law firm of Hayden and Colbert on behalf of Columbia's Woodcrest Chapel to rezone property from A, agriculture, to MN, mixed-use neighborhood, to allow additional commercial use of the property. The approximately 9.56-acre property is located at the northwest corner of Nifong Boulevard and Sinclair Street and includes the address 2201 West Nifong Boulevard. A request to table this item to the February 24, 2022 meeting has been received. Are there any additional comments on this from staff?
Nothing substantial. The delay would be, after discussing with the applicant, to potentially look at some additional data on some of the existing conditions out there before we bring forward a recommendation at the second February meeting. So, but I do think the applicant is in the audience.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. McMahon?
Depending on where you're going next, I do have my standard question, and it does relate to something Mr. Colbert wrote in his letter, as in if February 2nd will be enough time.
Well, I was going to open up the floor to public comments, all so right. Perhaps you could ask Mr. Colbert that if he came forward. All right, we'll open up the floor to public comment. If you can give your name and address for the record, that would be great.
Madam Chair, Caleb Colbert, attorney at 827 East Broadway. We do believe the February 22nd or 24th date would give us enough time. I believe the Sinclair project submitted their traffic study last week, so that should give us plenty of time to get that updated and submitted to the city.
Just in this supplemental report from Woodcrest Chapel, was that enough time for both of those things?
It is.
So you said the 24th, the second meeting in February?
Yes, sir.
All right, I think good. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions for Mr. Colbert? I see none. Thank you. Any additional speakers on this case? If there aren't, we'll close public comment. Commission comment. Commissioner Stanton.
My colleagues don't have any additional questions. I would like to entertain a motion. As it relates to case 43-2022, I would move to accept the table request till the February 24th, 2022 meeting.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stanton, seconded by Commissioner Rushing. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on this motion? None. Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Rushing?
Yes.
Commissioner McMahon?
Yes.
Commissioner Galway Jones?
Yes.
Commissioner Placer?
Yes.
Commissioner Kimball?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Commissioner Lowe?
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
Yes.
We have 9 votes to approve. The motion carries.
Thank you. Recommendation for tabling will be forwarded. That brings us to our second case for the evening, case 25-2022, a request by SSE on behalf of TS Storage LLC for approval of a new PD plan development plan to be known as the TS Storage PD plan, a revised statement of intent to add a new permitted use of self-service storage facilities and design exceptions to section 29-4.1 for reduced side and rear yard setbacks. The 1.79-acre property is located at the northeast corner of Grace Lane and Richland Road. This case was tabled at the December 9 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Chairman. As you stated, this is a multi-part request, so it will be a statement of intent revision, but also requests for an adoption of a new PD plan that does include a design exception. It is a public hearing matter, so it was advertised, and postcards were sent to surrounding property owners. It was advertised at the end of November, given the tabling, though. Today we are reviewing it in early January. So. Just to give you a quick overview of the site, it's kind of the oblique aerial from the south. The site is bordered on two sides by major roadways. On the west is Grace Lane, and running along the south, east-west road is Richland Road. The corner, or the site, is at the northeast corner of that intersection. You see the residential subdivision to the northeast of the site. This is kind of a large-scale view of the site plan, just for a little context. North here is to the right, and I'll rotate that on the next slides, but just kind of give you the full version there. You can see the storage facility layout, generally the layout, but we can come back to this for reference if we need a closer view. Also want to note, the applicant did submit some color elevations with this plan to illustrate the appearance of the buildings if they were to be constructed. We'll note the elevations do include building material information and general color. Sticking with the neutral tones, the earth tones of that of the for the construction of the property with a minimal amount of transparency. In this case, it would be windows on the front and a little bit on the side there. And we'll touch base with this a little bit more a little bit later in the presentation. But overall, what we are reviewing tonight is a request to amend the statement of intent. Specifically here, the statement of intent, or the use of permitted, or the list of permitted uses, was approved initially in 2003. At that time, it got CP zoning. The zoning included a list of uses which identified the permitted uses would be C1. That's generally consistent with our MN. There are some minor changes from that, but at the time, the C1 was kind of the neighborhood commercial zoning district, which was very similar to what our MN is now, which is a mixed-use neighborhood commercial district. The site was then subdivided in 2003. That plat did include an access restriction note on it, referred to it as a plat note, and did restrict access for this lot, prohibiting it from gaining a driveway access onto Richland Road to the south. I note that because if the PD plan is approved in its current form, P&Z would be offering a recommendation to remove that note, and then council can take that under consideration. A plat note generally can only be removed or reversed by council action. In this case, it would be an ordinance. And I'll discuss the access here again a little bit more, but wanted to kind of clarify that on the front end. So the plan itself does call for the installation and construction of 28 storage units, and these are a little bit unique. They're not your typical self-service storage facility that would be for common household goods. These are targeted to store larger vehicles, generally recreational vehicles, boats, and other larger vehicles. And that is hence the request for the height of the storage facility to exceed 14 feet. And I'll touch base on the 14 feet limit a little bit more too. So there's a little bit of information, and we'll get through all of it though. Access for the site, as I mentioned, is on Richland Road, but it also has an access point on Grace Lane that would provide ingress and egress to the site from two locations. You can see the storage units in the middle kind of angled to allow that larger vehicle entrance and exit a little more efficiently. Landscaping on the site is generally consistent with UDC requirements. They do have 20% of the site as landscaping, which is more than the minimum 15%. There's a use-specific standard that in the case of storage facilities, they required a slightly higher density of street trees. It's one per 40 feet versus 60 feet, and they do comply with that as well. So just come back to the access again. So currently we're reviewing this as staff's recommendation here is that access is not permitted onto Richland Road. So they are essentially asking again for that change to the plat note. So it's not necessarily a design exception because it's not prohibited by the code. In fact, the restriction that is in place right now does restrict new lots from getting access onto collectors and arterials unless they have 300 feet of street frontage. This one does not. So if it was platted today, it would not get access. But it was platted in 2003, so that provision doesn't apply. However, the note on the plat essentially does the same thing. It imposes the same type of restriction. So in conversations with Public Works, their preference is, since it's consistent with our current code, they'd prefer to see that restriction stay in place and prefer to remove the access on Richland Road. So their recommendation here is to revise the PD plan at a minimum to remove the access on Richland Road. If it is council's decision and PNZ's recommendation to grant that access onto Richland Road, we would recommend that there be some conditions associated with that, primarily about receiving right-of-way at the intersection. Part of that, the Public Works concerns, is that we are within, I think, about 225 feet of the intersection, which is not ideal distance-wise for safety reasons. But that distance is only going to probably reduce in the future because this intersection is most likely going to be converted into a roundabout at some point. So that distance to the intersection is actually going to decrease because the roundabout's going to be bigger. So that would be the rationale for the condition there, that the additional right-of-way be granted at the time that we release that restriction for access. One of the primary requests here is a revision to the statement of intent. So right now, self-service storage facility wasn't included on the initial list of uses that were permitted for the site. It was, at the time, a conditional use in C1. The list of uses, keep getting that reversed, at the time was C1 with three other uses that were conditional uses. Two uses that were conditional uses, and then one that was a C2 use. This one was a conditional use, but it wasn't added on the list, so it's not permitted on the site. Excuse me. Today, self-storage facilities are not permitted in the MN at all. They are not considered conditional uses either in the MN. They are only permitted in the MC. At that time, it was considered a conditional use in the C1. So when we were reviewing the appropriateness of adding that use, we did consider the fact that MN and C1 are very similar, and they are both considered to be neighborhood commercial. Adding a MC-type use into a area that right now only permits MN-type uses did not seem to be consistent with the intent of why that was zoned the way it was in the first place. A couple things with the site in general, why self-storage may not be appropriate in that location, is that, again, because of the C1 uses being akin to MN and MN being neighborhood-driven, self-service storage facilities are not typically ones thought of as providing direct commercial service or other services to residents in an immediate vicinity. They are considered to be a little bit more regional in approach. And so that doesn't necessarily fit in really with the context of this location. It also is very similar to the recommendations from the East Area Plan in that commercial areas within the East Area, which this is falls within, are meant to provide direct commercial services to residents. It recommends against any type of commercial uses that would be considered regional in scale. And again, that is similar to what the MC district is. It's mixed-use corridor. It's generally your higher grade, your higher level of intensity uses like hotels and other type heavy commercial uses like lumber yards and things like that. So our finding was that adding an MC use to this area, given the context of the neighborhood around it, directly abutting it, and the fact that it's currently only allows C1 uses, we didn't feel the addition of an MC use here would be appropriate. In addition, this type of use is a little bit different than some of the other heavy commercial uses like hotel. It actually doesn't drive a lot of traffic, which in some situations may be appropriate and may be desirable. However, because of that less traffic, you do have less of that driving factor for walkability, again, for service to residents. And you also get a lot less kind of eyes on the street for a certain use that would add to kind of the safety factor for a site as well. The self-storage facilities are generally better suited for industrial or commercial settings. A lot of it is aesthetic driven because they're typically not attractive facilities. They're a little more industrial building forms. And so a lot of times you do see those industrial areas. I would note though that the elevations that have been proposed are somewhat or are fairly more attractive than you would generally see. And so I would say that they've done a nice job with presenting a facade to the buildings that is going to blend in a little bit better with a residential neighborhood. They've looked at kind of higher grade building materials, kind of brick and stone and cladding versus certain types of metal cladding or ephes, which is not durable and usually is not as an attractive and desirable building material. Another thing I want to touch on too is one of the design exceptions they'll be requesting with the PD plan. Initially with the CP zoning prior to UDC, the CP zoning had its own setbacks and it was 10 feet. When we adopted the UDC, our PD district does not have its own setback requirements. So it defaults on to what's the most appropriate setback for that use. So in this instance, since self-service storage facilities are only allowed in MC, we looked at the setbacks for MC as the most appropriate in this location. And those are 20 feet when you directly abut residential property, which this one does. So they're asking for the previous, if you will, setbacks for a commercial property next to residential at the 10-foot setback level. We looked at that and, again, did not find a real compelling reason why that setback, which is designed to separate uses that might be incompatible, why that setback should be reduced beyond what a resident abutting an MC district would be granted. So we felt that in this case, the 20 foot is a more appropriate setback in this location. The last thing I want to touch on is the fact that the self-service storage facility is subject to a set of use-specific standards as well. So if you recall, and I think it's attached to this packet, basically use-specific standards for self-service storage facilities, and it's a page and a half of restrictions there. A lot of those are designed to mitigate kind of the visual impacts and also just the general impacts of these facilities next to residential properties. But in that, and just a little history there, prior to the UDC, no self-service storage facility could exceed 14 feet at all. There was no pathway for them to exceed 14 feet. With this amendment in the UDC, we did allow storage facilities to exceed 14 feet in two different situations. So there's kind of two pathways for them to exceed 14 feet. One of them is in Section 1, and I'll focus on Section 1 of the use-specific standards number Roman numeral 6. So there's six standards there. And the last one is that, A is that it cannot be within 100 feet of a residential zone property, or can't abut a residentially zoned property, and it can't be within 100 feet of a structure. This one does not meet that requirement. So that pathway is not open to them. So the second pathway then generally would be to seek a conditional use. Because this is a PD, they don't go through an additional conditional use process. It's essentially we're doing the conditional process through the PD. So there is no additional approvals needed for it, but it is important to point out the process that they would have normally gone through to be granted the excess height beyond 14 feet. And the second pathway, which is section 2 of that use specific standard, basically says they can seek waiver of the original conditions if they can show that there's some unique standards or the mitigation that was included in section 1 wasn't necessary due to the context of the area. Reviewing this, there did not appear to be any unique circumstances here. They directly abut residentially zoned properties. They are very near residential buildings, in fact. So there wasn't any of the mitigating factors that I could see that, had this been a conditional use, would have led to the granting of the excess height beyond 14 feet. So I would point out that if it was zone MC, they would have had to have come and gotten a conditional use, and they would have had to provided evidence that they could be this close to a residentially zoned property and that there was no other mitigating factors that they could have done, or excuse me, there's no reason that restriction needed to apply in this situation for some reason. So in this case, we didn't see there's really any factors there that led us to believe that would have been granted. And so that was part of the rationale also for not supporting the PD plan. So we didn't feel the excess height probably would have been warranted in an MC situation, let alone on a site that generally permits MN type uses. So just to conclude, again, the primary reason here for staff's denial is the addition of this use on the site. Adding an MC type use into in a C1 MN district doesn't seem consistent with what the intent was. It doesn't seem consistent with what the amount of commercial here would lead to identify the area is, and that's kind of a marketplace, which again is more residentially utilized commercial uses. To go to an MC type use, generally you would look at large acreage commercial areas such as St. Charles and I-70, Nifong and Providence. Those are the areas where you would expect to see MC type uses, where you have a certain critical mass of commercially zoned property. This site is about 2 acres. And I didn't touch on this in the staff report, but just to kind of go over to the corners on the other sides of this intersection, they all also are zoned PD, and they all have almost the same type of use restrictions. It's generally C1 uses. So this corner very much has been identified as a neighborhood commercial type location. And staff's findings were that adding a self-service storage facility here would not be consistent with that intent. We do have additional concerns with the access and also with granting that design exception to the height. So all that together, staff's recommendation at this time is denial of the statement of intent revision to add the use, and then also denial of the PD plan with its associated design exception. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Before we move on to questions for staff, I'd like to ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte prior to this meeting related to this case to please disclose that now, so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of the case in front of us. Seeing none, are there any questions for staff? Commissioner McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Planner Smith, thank you for your in-depth and clear report. When it becomes time, this will be a two-motion thing? Three?
I think so. The crux here is you cannot approve the PD plan without approving the statement of intent, because if you don't approve the use, the PD plan is for use, then that hasn't been approved. But I think it's safe to do two motions.
Two motions with the SOI first. Thank you, Planner Smith.
Any additional questions for staff? If there are not, we will open up the floor to public comment. If there's anyone who has any comment to share in this case, give your name and address for the record.
Hello, my name is Keenan Simon, 210 Park Avenue. I'm with SSC, the civil engineer, representing the owner for the property.
Yes, we do have a PowerPoint. The applicant wishes to show them.
Yeah. Thank you there. So I think to understand this PD plan, it's really important to kind of review the storage business model that TS Storage is presenting. You know, the last few years has been a surge in recreational equipment. That's RV, motorhomes, boats, campers. The sales have boomed. There's been a lot of outdoor activities with families and such. And the city of Columbia really has minimal amount of storage options for indoor storage options here in Columbia. You know, HOAs don't allow boats, RVs to be parked in their driveway, and the city doesn't allow boats, RVs, and motorhomes to be parked on the street. So really, the target that client that TS Storage is going after is owners that are desiring a safe, private indoor parking option to store their motorhome, RV, or boat. In general, they're looking to target a larger motorhome for 13 units of the site, which would house a Class A type motorhome that would be 40 foot in length, 12 foot in height. And that's why we have the height adjustment to the 14-foot limit for those units that are centrally located on that PD plan. When you start doing the math and you're looking at clearances above a garage, a motor, and a roof, you start to get upwards of a 20-foot height. And that's where that height request was kind of brought in with this. So moving forward or exiting, the first thing we did, first step we did was reach out to neighborhoods, reach out to the neighbors that were directly adjacent to this property. There was a fair amount of COVID going on at the time, we did reach out directly to the owners through phone calls and emails. We reviewed our business operations and kind of our model of what we are planning on doing for the site. And then on top of that, we shared site layouts that showed the proposed development that included setbacks, screening and landscaping that we intended to provide. With this, we kind of developed the PD plan that we then took to the city. We also included to Clint letters of support from every one of the adjacent property owners to kind of give you an idea of who we spoke with directly and who we had support letters from. The property that is in green is the subject property we're talking about tonight. The home, the duplexes that are associated in the red were the property owners that we really received letters of support for this project on. So really, the development of the PD plan reflects more of the business model that TS Storage is trying to do here. They're targeting a larger motorhome. This requires additional turn radius and more maneuverability through the site. With this, they really felt like the circulation patterns through the site is greatly improved with two access points. It prevents any requirement for some of the larger vehicles or, you know, a truck towing a boat to have to do any sort of three-point turn. And I'll kind of just pull up the site plan to discuss through this. And then they also increase the width between the RV slips and the boat camper storage to a greater width to allow for queuing up and backing into the units that are located on the east side of the property, if that kind of makes sense there. Obviously, Clint touched base on the two entrances to the property, more specifically the one there on Richland Road. If you can see with the site plan, the approach is entering the site from one entrance to the other, allows you to pull through. There's a garage door intended on both sides of the RV slips so that you would actually be able to pull through that slip and exit without being needing the requirement of backing up or creating any sort of turn or possibly hitting anything on the property there. So the second entrance, it doesn't quite meet the separation requirement the city would like per their standards. I mean, that's obvious, but there's a couple points I want to make. This entrance is existing and it's been there since the 1960s. You know, the proposed business use for this property is a very low traffic demand. It's not a convenience store or fast food restaurant or one of those types of uses that could back up property leading into the intersection. There's 28 units, as Clint touched base on. So you're not seeing a high traffic flow that could really impact having the second entrance there off Richland. I know the city of Columbia has identified a future roundabout at the intersection. You'll note that the two properties south of Richland Road there are kind of cropped off for this future roundabout. There's been a few developments that are in the works that are all chipping in 20 to 30% chunks of a roundabout project that will occur in the next 3 to 7 years at this location. I know that the owners are willing to dedicate a portion of a street easement for this future roundabout as long as they're able to maintain this access point onto Richland that's already there. So trying to go over the accommodations for this development, for this PD plan that that obviously doesn't quite meet some of the criteria that Clint's pointed out. Some of the things we did do was increase the building setback from the street frontage line. We're approximately 65 feet minimum from the street property line to any of our structures. What this does is it increases the landscaping and the green space between our property line and the buildings that are actually on site. I think the city minimum landscaping is 15%. The site plan that we show actually reflects about a 32% green space of landscaping. I just rounded down to 30% to show that. I know Clint said 20. I believe the 20% number was just in the statement of intent that was originally submitted, not actually what the PD plan shows there. We also tried to accommodate the future roundabout and redesign the site so that we didn't, so that we reduced the number of units that we could accomplish on the site to account for the future roundabout. We actually did that in consideration for trying to negotiate the entrance onto Richland Road. And then on top of that, we're also trying to provide enhanced architectural finishes and designs for the building. The intent is to create a more residential appearance with the structure so that it fits in with the residential area that it abuts. And providing some design features such as step backs in the facade to kind of break it up and make it look less commercial in the grand scheme of things. So this is just kind of another shot from the other angle that kind of shows this stepped facade to kind of enhance that design element. Once again, these units that are at the central portion of the site that do have the additional height are strictly just for the RV slips to be able to fit a Class A motorhome in. The units that are on the east side of the site do not exceed that 14-foot height, just to kind of clarify the difference between those and kind of where they're located at on the site.
Thank you. We are over our 6-minute time limit. Were there concluding?
That's where I'm at right here. Just want to, you know, touch base and summarize and look for support for this PD plan. You know, we're providing architectural design aspects that are going to help make it look, reduce the commercial look, you know, re-increase the landscaping green space at the street frontage and provided more trees and such. We also provided a setback for the future roundabout. We're asking to maintain that access on the Richland for circulation of our site. And, you know, the neighbors supported this project that are directly adjacent to us. This shows, you know, acceptance of this project in the community, and we ask for you guys to do this.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I'm going to go down the line. Ms. Commissioner Placer.
Yes. It's not so much a question as it is a comment, because you talked about neighbor support. We just received some communication from someone in the neighborhood that is not supportive. The correspondence included it in our packet that was supportive appeared to be a boilerplate, literally word for word statements with different names affixed. There was something inauthentic about that. I don't know if that boilerplate was provided by your company or by the owner, but it did not impress me as genuine neighborhood input. Now, I assume you've got the letter from Teresa Long.
Yeah, no, I just kind of read through it. It looks as if she believes that this is going to be an open lot for storage, similar to the lot across from James Fencing, where materials are just placed in the open. That's not the intent. There is no open storage allowed on this property.
Yeah, I think that was her fear that might happen.
Correct, yeah.
But in general, it looks like you're trying to shoehorn something that needs a larger space, especially the limitation of the space between this, the reduction of the space between this and the neighboring houses, which are really very close, is troubling.
Commissioner Galway-Jones?
Similarly, I agree you've got property owner sign off, but it looks like we've got 11 duplexes and 4 letters. So I'm wondering if you talked to any of the actual residents.
No, I talked to the owners of the property.
So you talked to no residents?
That's correct.
Okay. That was my only question. Yeah. Thank you.
Commissioner McMahon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hi, Keenan. I had a couple of questions. I agree with you about the need. My parents owned one of these buses, as I call them.
Yeah,
I don't mind the need. I do agree with the previous statement about a little bit of shoehorning. And I don't really have a problem with the 22 feet. I know there's work in construction. My parents have all these things. You need a lot of space. I do have a problem, number one, with the Richland Norwood exit. We're already looking, for those of us who live on the west side, some other areas in Columbia, we're already looking at exits. And I agree, you have to have a throughput for those giant things to turn around. You don't want them backing up. I get that. The concept on a busy road of a 40-foot bus or a tandem rig pulling out there very close to the intersection, I think is very problematic. The 10 to 20 feet, we have to think about, or 20 to 10 feet, we have to think about ownership going into the future. And it was probably going to be fine with the owners of the duplexes. They don't care. They don't live there. I have concern about that. And I appreciate you need a big footprint to do what you're doing. As the previous comment would be, your space might be a little bit small.
Other questions? Commissioner Rushing.
Will this site be attended?
There's not actually intended to be an office there or anything of that nature. It is more of a, I guess an app that allows you access to the units and stuff. The intent was never to have any sort of hard fencing at the frontage or the boundary of the property. But more or less access units for your slip, essentially keypads of that nature that would allow in and out of that unit.
I understand that you intend for this to be used for RVs and boats and such. I'm wondering if there's any mechanism to ensure that intent is what occurs. It seems like someone could rent a storage unit and use it for whatever they wanted.
Yes, and that's kind of where we had, it's kind of a unique circumstance as far as what zoning category it fits into, and that's why we had to go with the self-storage portion for the use group of this, is because, yes, we can monitor who is, in there, and we can look at, we could potentially do checks on what's being stored there to make sure someone's not living, but you are right. It's not to say that someone couldn't try to do something that isn't in line with the use that's intended.
But I'm not sure. Would you be able to forbid someone from renting one of these to store building materials or anything? I mean, I'm not sure if that's...
I think the price point that's intended for indoor storage for these RV units would greatly exceed the cost of someone storing a material use. I'll just be honest with you. You're looking at a monthly rental rate of $700, $800. They can go to a very low-end, cheap storage unit outside of town, and they could rent 10, 15 units for that price. I'm just being honest. The clientele that they're trying to target is able to afford more of a higher-end rental for a big toy. That's the target for this facility, quite honestly.
I see. Thanks.
Commissioner Rushing?
The units in the middle for the RVs, are those drive-through?
That is correct. They will have a garage door on each side. You'll see that there's kind of a bump out that represents each slip for the unit.
So the two entrances or exits are really necessary for those particular vehicles.
It really simplifies the maneuverability through the site. It's not to say that someone couldn't pull through coming off of Grace, and then they would most likely have to maneuver a 2 or 3 point turn after they've exited their slip to go back out on Grace. So, correct. The intent was to try and make it as less cumbersome and for new drivers and owners to be able to maneuver through the site without concern or apprehension about hitting something.
Commissioner McMahon?
Just to reiterate, Simon made. Having stored things on construction stuff and leased spaces for that, this is way out of the league. You're not going to spend that kind of money. There's nothing to prevent someone who's willing to spend that kind of money from doing something we'd rather they not do, but they could do it much more cheaply somewhere else. And to Mr. Simon's other point, like I said, my parents have one of these things. They're not easy to drive, and you're talking about people who don't drive stuff of this size normally. A 2 or 3 point backing up turn, I am being supportive of Mr. Simon in this case, you might tell from my earlier comments where I'm going to end up with this, though. I just wanted to make those points. Thank you.
Commissioner Galway-Jones.
Sorry, just one more clarification. You keep referring to the existing drive on Richland.
Correct.
That looks to me to be a residential access that just happens to begin where you want your driveway to be. But right now, that goes sort of onto your property, but it's clearly being used by the residents. It is not a driveway per se. It looks like it's a gravel access that people have kind of made a driveway.
Yeah, like a driveway. I mean,
it's not the same thing that you're trying to do.
All I'm simply stating is the fact is that entrance been there since, you know, the 60s, late 60s. And
right.
We'd like to maintain that.
But it's not a curbed entrance that is being used for commercial purposes.
You're correct. It's not an improved entrance. I mean,
thank you.
There's a lot of entrances off of Richland that are not curbed. You know, the site's not developed.
Mr. Smith, can you go back to the property plan, please?
Excuse me, which slide?
There. The report we received identified that the request for a reduction in the side yard setbacks was necessary to ensure proper maneuverability on the site for the larger vehicles. Is that a correct assessment?
That was the intent. You mentioned this because we kind of looked at this site and if there was an option to provide that 20-foot setback, we could possibly reduce some of the green space that we are accounting at the frontage of the property to shift everything 10 feet. But Clint thought that would not be sufficient for noting or reviewing or changing at this time, kind of with where we're at. That would be something we could, we would be willing to, I don't know what the next step would be, but we'd be willing to consider.
I guess I was also curious why the parking or parking stars are also located within the maneuverability space. And if those were, parking stalls are typically at least 8 feet wide. So if those are relocated, we could gain at least 18 feet on the long side. So can the parking go somewhere else?
Yes, the parking could go somewhere else.
All right. Any additional questions for the speaker? Commissioner Kimball.
Where the parking is on that side over there, is that, that would be for RVs uncovered?
Well, it's, no, there's a, for self-storage standards, you're required to provide on-site parking.
Okay.
I know it's kind of silly because, well, all the parking's in buildings, but it's a requirement that is in the new UDC, so that we provided that.
No, because I have family that have RVs, and if you want to go visit your RV to do any maintenance or cleaning or stocking before a trip, you need to park your car somewhere on the site when you go into the RV. And that's what these stalls are for.
Correct. No, you are correct.
Commissioner Kimball.
As far as security issues, what is being done to keep that area safe?
Yeah, I mean, the intent would be to provide standard lighting, high cutoff, so that it doesn't bleed into the residential district. But from a security standpoint, they have video cameras that are set up throughout the site that monitor the site. As far as they're trying not to, the intent is not to create a gated community or a gated storage area that has an industrial look. That's why they're trying to increase the green space and provide more of an open site. The units are locked. They have a new Bluetooth digital lock that's programmable and resettable by the person that is running out the slip, and it can be changed, you know, on site if there is, if someone would need to get into it for an emergency situation, police, ambulance, or something of that nature. So that is the development intent that they have for that, if that makes sense.
Any additional questions? I see none at this time. Thank you. There are no additional speakers on this case. We'll close public comment. Commission comment. Commissioner McMahon.
If none of my fellow commissioners have any comments. This will be two motions here, one for the statement of intent, one for the PD plan. Firstly, in the matter of the revision to the statement of intent on case number 25-2022, thank you, Mr. Smith, I move to approve. I've made my motion in the affirmative. I will be voting no.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. We have a motion on the floor for the PD plan.
Statement of intent.
Oh, sorry, statement of intent. That was for my clarification as much as
I was going to ask
everyone else's. Any discussion on this motion? Commissioner Galway-Jones.
I will be very brief. I just want to point out, so that it's on the record somewhere, that this is an 18-and-a-half-year-old PD plan statement of intent that clearly has to be amended. But under my, I really prefer straight zoning whenever possible so that things don't sit there for 18-and-a-half years on an empty lot. I just want to say that in a place that will be transcribed. Thank you.
Duly noted. Any additional comments? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Rushing?
No.
Commissioner McMahon?
No.
Commissioner Galway-Jones?
No.
Commissioner Placer?
No.
Commissioner Kimball?
No.
My vote is no. Commissioner Lowe?
No.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
No.
We have 8 no votes and 1 yes. The motion carries.
Motion's, I mean, the denied. Motion is denied. Sorry. That was
democracy in action there.
Commissioner McMahon.
Very serendipitous on this day of all days. If there are no other current questions, I have another motion. in the matter of the TS Storage Plan PD Plan, case 25-2022. I move to approve. Again, I'm making my motion in the affirmative. I plan to vote no.
Moved by Commissioner McMahon, seconded by Commissioner Stanton. Second motion on the floor, this one for the PD plan. Any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Carroll, may we have roll call?
Commissioner Rushing?
No.
Commissioner McMahon?
No.
Commissioner Galway-Jones?
No.
Commissioner Placer?
No.
Commissioner Kimball?
No.
My vote is no. Commissioner Lowe?
No.
Commissioner Stanton?
Yes.
Commissioner Burns?
No.
We have 8 no votes, 1 yes. This motion is denied.
Recommendations will be forwarded to City Council. That concludes our cases for the evening. Are there any additional public comments? There aren't. Are there any staff comments?
Your next meeting will be on January 20th. We will have a regular work session at 5:30 p.m. and very likely a very short January 20th meeting, as we are anticipating the following two items that are currently advertised and scheduled for this meeting to be requested to be tabled. But because they have been advertised, we are required to conduct the public hearing associated with them in case there are residents of the adjoining properties wanting to address the issue. So there will be there will be staff reports prepared, and there will be a meeting. However, it will be short. These two particular requests are both of the same property. One is a conditional use permit. And the other is a rezoning request from Ag to MC. The conditional use permit is to permit a recreational vehicle travel trailer park on the subject site, which is here shown on the map. It is currently zoned Ag. They are requesting to have the property rezoned to MC. This is two parcels of property at this point, principally accessed off of Paris Road. Though it does have the appendage on the very southern portion of the property to get you to Hinkson Creek Road, but you would have to cross the creek to get there. The improvements that are immediately to the west are Tractor Supply and Kuntz Glass, immediately across the street to the west on Paris Road. You will notice the maps are slightly different, and this will be a problem for a while. We had a catastrophic loss of information related to our mapping software, and we are back to generating maps the old-fashioned way. So we are slowly but surely adapting to this, and some of the information that you saw this evening on your aerial photography, such as adjoining zoning and some other things, we're trying to clean up at this point to bring it back to life. So bear with us. You will have your regular set of maps, though, within your packets, locator, aerial locator, your utility map, and your topo map. They're just going to look a little bit different for the short term. We hope to have the previous mapping software back in shape by the end of hopefully this month. Those are your two items. As I said, they will likely be tabled. If they're not, it could be an interesting discussion during the 20th meeting, but we believe at this point, given we haven't received first-round comments back and there are some other questions that need to be answered, I will have a tabling request sometime next week before we produce the packet. So look for that. As we discussed this evening in work session, we will continue to move forward with discussion of our short-term rental regulations with shelling out the first tier of potential STR standards along with definitions for your consideration to which we can then start to put the framework together for our actual regulatory structure that we would utilize in the future. With that, that's all we have to offer this evening. Thank you very much. Hopefully you enjoyed your break. It will be short-lived because the February 10th meeting is quite extensive. So what we can move through or move to a future agenda like the 24th will be beneficial.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Commissioner comments? Commissioner Placer.
Yeah, similar to Commissioner Gowie-Jones, I wanted to put something on the record while it's still fresh, and that is about annexation and the relationship between annexation and the proposals that we see. At the December 20th City Council meeting, which I attended, the council took up Hardy Plat 1 on Route KK. And as noted by Councilperson Pitzer, this was a very strange and troubling request. If you remember, it was this U-shaped or thing surrounding someone's home, and it was very strange, and there was puzzlement all around, and it looked like it was coming from P&Z, and we had approved this strange thing, which we had not. We did not approve the annexation of that horseshoe. Council approved it at some time in the past, and it was all I could do to restrain myself from popping up and saying, we had nothing to do with this. And as weird as that was, in this case, annexation at least preceded the proposal, because we have also had the simultaneous requests upon annexation. Well, we are obligated after annexation to assign a land use, to assign a zoning. Then it is our duty. But there is an assumption of annexation. It goes on the consent agenda. It's thoughtlessly approved. And that's how we get Hardy Plat 1. So it's not good city planning. It's making the boundaries of the city look like one of those impossible jigsaw puzzles that you see and that I would never buy because I could never possibly work it. So I want to encourage us to keep bringing this forward, to urge the council to be more careful about annexation requests and not to conflate annexation with our decisions on P&Z. And just for the record, that's my statement.
Thank you, Commissioner Placer. Commissioner McMahon, and then Commissioner Carroll.
Oh, just real quick to Commissioner Placer's thing. As you know, I attend many of these meetings, and had I caught that, it was already well done. I tried to clarify that on the record for them. You can see them looking sideways sometimes, that we did not do that, or maybe afterwards individually or something. I had another motion, but I think
Commissioner Carroll just had a follow-up comment.
Yeah, if I may. Issues surrounding annexation and whose purview the decision is, or at least the initial vote is, have come up quite a bit over the past 2 years, and perhaps before that too, but it came to my attention within the past 2 years. And I've been trying to make it as clear as possible whenever we have an annexation case with zoning attached to it before us, that this body only votes on zoning. We don't vote on annexation. We don't review annexation. And it's for that reason that the last two times that it came before us, I asked to pull the associated annexation off the consent agenda once they're linked. So what's happening is that a zoning assignment comes before us, and that's what we vote on. Only council votes and reviews the annexation. We vote on it pending annexation, should council approve. And then after our vote, it has to get put onto the agenda, so they're being linked at that point and then put on the agenda. So that is the strategy that I observed to be the most clear about what we are able to vote on and what we are not.
But based on the comments you've both made, it's clear council does not understand this process and who's approving what. So I commend the efforts to provide clarification. Commissioner McMahon.
I have a comment, and then I have that final motion. There will be at least one, if not two or three, new council persons. Prior to the election, city staff actually sits down with them, the prospective candidates, and they're giving a briefing. There may be a little more focus that could go in, like in duties and things like that. I'll pass that along also. If my fellow commissioners have no other comments or concerns at this time, I move to adjourn.
Okay. I'm going to give that to Commissioner Placer, the second. We are adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Good to see you all. Happy New Year.